What's going on? We're back with another episode of the Halfcast podcast. Today I'm pretty excited. I've got someone who I've spoken about on the podcast before, who beats me up on the weekly. but thank you, brother, for coming in, Big Joshy.
Only in one specific aspect of the sport.
but doesn't matter. It's beat up a lot, so that's my feelings weekly. But I was trying to figure out where to start with this, but I know, like I was saying, that you speak well, so I didn't plan too many questions. I really want to get into, like, obviously where you started. I really want to try and show on the show, on this show, how people who are in the pursuit for greatness, they've gone through in their life to sort of, like, sort of build that, because
kind of like the ups and downs.
Yeah, definitely. And even the mental aspect, the discipline side, the confidence, like, you know, you're not born with that. You don't wake up and all of a sudden you're really confident or all that. Even just starting from because he's a high level jiu-jitsu player, I probably should have mentioned that, would you say the best combat athlete in Australia, or
I think Volko's got that pretty well sorted.
No, but talk your shit, man. The best best heavyweight
in jiu-jitsu for sure.
Yeah,
in jiu-jitsu for sure. So but thanks for having me on, first of all. But yeah, to go through kind of the progression scheme of everything, it wasn't my first choice of jiu-jitsu. I've obviously picked this up quite recently in the last couple of years. I started in the lockdown of 2020, where the best mate of mine, Zach, he said, "Hey, do you want to come do some karate in the garage?" And I was like, "Yeah, all right, sweet, no worries." I thought he was just taking the piss, and they ended up showing me what jiu-jitsu was, even in its own small version of what we did in a garage with four guys that I didn't know anything. Yep. And basically just bear hugged and squeezed everybody, and they were like, "Oh, you're going to be like good at this because you're hard to do shit to." And then as soon as the lockdown finished, I got my license again from being an idiot, and then went to my first jiu-jitsu session, and pretty much haven't stopped since then.
So you, for those that don't know, you didn't start in jiu-jitsu, you started in rugby league, and was that ever since a kid as well?
Yeah, since very, very early on. 4 or 5, was always playing some sort of sport. I actually originated in soccer.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and I got off the field, and you know when you get the participation trophy for the end of the year, because they don't count goals, and it's for activity and fun. I said to Mum, I said, "When do I get to hit somebody?" And she's like, "Oh, okay, well, we're going to put you in rugby league. Yeah. We'll make sure you're doing the right thing. But you got to wear shoulder pads, headgear, or the probably shin pads if she'd let me."
Yeah.
And transitioned over to rugby league, fell in love, loved it forever.
Were you the only kid wearing the shoulder pads and headgear?
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember I was. Yeah, for like, the most part. Because like, I think most of the crowd know my mom is Caucasian, and a lot of the Islander kids do not wear shoulder pads and headgear. But I was the only one out there with headgear and shoulder pads.
They have shoulder pads and big heads, so they're fine.
Built in.
Exactly.
Soccer, is, to be fair, looking back on it after getting punched in the head for so many years, I probably wish I stayed in soccer.
Career in that would have been all right.
a lot less violent. But
your shins would be the same conditioning, but the head would be a little bit better.
Oh, wow. But was it always team sports growing
up? Yeah, it was always team sports. I generally liked that that aspect of it. I was a pretty shy kid, so I didn't really have much to say off the field, but I found my home in communicating with other people about a specific goal, obviously scoring points and tackling people and doing those bits and pieces. So I found a lot of what you're talking about, confidence in that side of things, that started to lead me towards pursuing greatness in terms of sports and achievements in that side of things, because I didn't really have that outside of what that was. So that became like a primary focus when I was a lot younger.
But that's why I noticed that that was one of the key things that I sort of thought about when I was thinking of these questions, was confidence. Like your confidence in jiu-jitsu and the confidence about the way that you speak about yourself and in your competence at jiu-jitsu is, one, it's admirable, but two, it's something that I always notice in a lot of top-level athletes. Like I can think of three guys right now that are definitely either ex-champions or champions, and they all have that level of confidence, which is borderline delusional sometimes.
It has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you... when they talk about it, sounds like if you look at Conor McGregor, man, he'd just lost a fight, his broken leg, and he was like, "I'm in your DM." No, yeah. It's like, you're still talking your shit.
I'm going to the car park. Yeah. This is not over.
Yeah. So, and then for you to say that you were shy as a kid, where was that developed? Or you obviously said in the team sport, but that was inside the game, and now you can tell it's part of who you are now outside of the gym and game, right?
Yeah. Yeah, to speak about what you're talking about, it's definitely built and earned and developed, but it's not a special characteristic that not anybody can cultivate. Mm. Everybody has the capacity to exist as that. And I think it's more so, I like talking to people about the present moment and bits and pieces like that, and they go, "Oh, how do you maintain presence?" I say, well, you can't get out of it because that's where everything exists. And I believe that your natural waking state is confidence and competence. You just have to find a way to get back to where you naturally exist. Mm. And that expresses itself through a myriad of different things. For me, it was sports very early on. And then I forced myself to put myself in poor situations where I wasn't confident and competent. Like I was working in retail, I was working in hospitality and all these bits and pieces where I had to have conversations from many different walks of life. I didn't know what the other person was about. I didn't know if they were well-intentioned or poor-intentioned, or if they're going to throw compliments or shade at your customer service or anything like that. So that definitely contributed.
Love that, man. Because I was just talking about this, that I'm exactly the same. I was really bad at speaking and like I would get stressed and stuff. So I started the podcast.
Yeah, so, perfect.
Yeah. Perfect. It's like if something scares me or if there's like something that in my head, I'll go, oh, no, I'm not going to. I have to attack it straight away.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, I really like that.
I think that's part of what's made your career so great as well, is that volition to go, you know what? I don't feel comfortable in this area, so I'm going to charge forward at it. Like coming to our room for jiu-jitsu is definitely not easy. And there's definitely people that shy away from finding and sourcing the best versions of themselves because of that intermediary spot where they don't want to go because maybe they look foolish or maybe they're not as good as they are in other areas of their life. And I think that goes to show for the success of yourself and myself that we actually start to charge towards that. Yeah. Every time you experience fear, I think it's the nod to go through, not to go away.
Yeah.
Because every time you go away, you don't learn anything and you reinforce it in the back of your mind. If you go, I'm going to charge through fear, then you get to learn the lessons, even if you get the ups or the downs.
Yep.
It's regardless.
And just to put in English what Josh was saying, he was saying in a nice way that I go in and get bashed at the gym every day. He said in a lot of big words that I'm shit at the gym. So, and it's how I put it is like when you have a marathon runner or a marathon runner, a marathon runner and a triathlete, and then they both run together, the guy running the marathon is going to absolutely wipe
of
the
course
floor with
that's
the,
his
and,
field
yes and that's it. I think that's sort of the best explanation what happens with MMA and going to the jiu-jitsu gym. And one thing I love about martial arts is it always directs me to where I'm supposed to be, and it's just crazy interesting that the best jiu-jitsu gym is down the road from my house. I've come in here and I like obviously met you, and it's always happened like when I first got back into jiu-jitsu, it was with Manol Tavares in Melbourne, but that's how it always happens. Like, I don't know if that's with you, but martial arts always takes me where I'm supposed to go in life.
Yeah. Well, it's synchronicities, right? And the more that you develop yourself as a person, Carl Jung talks about the individuation process where you find out more of who you are and you trust more of your intuition and your initiation into different things. And for some weird reason, I just got pulled in that direction where my mate said, do you want to come do karate in the garage on one Saturday afternoon? And I said yes instead of saying no. I could have made up an excuse. It could have been difficult for me to get there. I didn't have a license at the time, so he had to come and get me and I had to feel like a burden and all those bits and pieces, but I didn't allow that to shatter the situation. And I also didn't allow it to think, oh, these guys have been training for 6 months. What if I get embarrassed?
Yeah.
I just went in head first and I went, you know what? I want to do this. I want to have a good time with my friends. And it's the same thing with finding out about Sydney West. My initial privates coach, he said to me, he goes, if you want to take this seriously, you should go to this gym in Penrith because that's where the good training is. And I didn't think about it for a second. I didn't have any doubts or anything like that. Or what if I'm good at my little home gym here, big fish, small pond, and then I come over here and then I get embarrassed, blah, blah, blah. That was never part of the conversation. It's like, all right, he thinks that's a good thing for me. Done. Let's go do it.
So just to wheel it back just before we get into the full jiu-jitsu, you're going from NRL. That transition, was it actually, why did you stop playing footy?
It got to a point where I was on the cusp of gaining entry to a top 30.
Okay.
And I did a preseason at the Raiders after a pretty decent career at 20s in South Sydney. And South Sydney decided not to offer me a contract for a preseason. So I decided to look elsewhere, spoke to the manager. I said, look, do you think I'm worthy of a contract for preseason? Of course, he said yes. Originally, I had a deal to go with Melbourne, and some other things happened where it steered me away. But again, looking back, it was the exact reason that it needed to happen to push me into where I am now. So yep. I don't harbor any resentment or yep. anything for that. Did the preseason in grade in Canberra, coming off a complete dislocation of my right ankle. So I started a little bit behind the eight ball, didn't have a huge name for myself, didn't make a big splash, and then ended up getting told in the training session, in the car park after a training session, that I would no longer be needed.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a sting.
But that's, yeah. So, and how many years at this point were you playing, well, playing rugby league? How many?
18, 19 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like to be in a position where almost your whole life, you've essentially, right? Were you 20?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that you have been pushing in this direction for footy, then for them to tell you, oh, no longer needed. Where are you at that point in your life? Like, I know now looking back on it, you're like, of course. It's supposed to be pushing. But that time,
it's easy to say that in hindsight, yeah. of course. And at the time, I didn't have this mindset that I've cultivated. Yeah. So I was disheartened. I was a bit sour.
Yeah.
I didn't allow that to stop me completely, but it kind of did drive a wedge in between me and pursuing the career purposefully,
yep.
where I saw training as more of a burden. I saw competing as more of a burden. And as soon as the love lost is there, that's very difficult to yeah. come back from, because yep. rugby league is a very difficult sport. Props to anybody who does it full time, because mm-hmm. your body gets smashed.
Yeah, every week. And then you're straight back in the weight room.
And to keep coming back. And the guys that play, like Nathan, the guys that play Origin midweek and then will back up for another game.
Yeah, then international foot in when everyone's resting. Like,
crazy. Yep. They play through shoulder injuries. They play through knee injuries and all these bits and pieces. So for myself, I end up going all the way from a grade preseason all the way down to Ron Massey, which is three jumps essentially. I should have been in New South Wales Cup. Mm-hmm. And then I had this chip on my shoulder about, I did grade preseason. I'm the only one that's done that here. Now I'm not playing Cup. This is bullshit, blah, blah, blah.
Almost victim sort of.
Victim mentality, yeah. absolutely. I can own up and say that.
Yep.
And by the time it got to the stage where I was going to go for another preseason, I'd been living with Liam Knight, actually.
Yep.
And he would always joke about, I'm going to retire soon. And obviously he hasn't. Yeah. It was a bit of a joke, but it actually imprinted on me. Yeah. Where I think the only reason that he was saying that is because I was in the wrong path.
Yeah, right.
I think he was only joking about it, because it's a kind of weird joke to make about your career.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to retire soon, but that really stuck with me.
Yeah.
So when I did go back to Ron Massey, I still enjoyed the sport, but then I had other things where people were rocking up off benders trying to play games.
Yeah, because then no one's taking it as seriously.
No.
Right? And did that give you a bit of not entitlement, were you like, sort of like, I shouldn't be here, essentially? Like,
it was frustrating.
Yeah.
It was very frustrating, because I was in the weight room. I was doing the right thing. I was eating the right food. I was staying clean, staying steer away from parties and drugs. And I'd gotten out of that phase of my life. And I was like, this is my job. This is what I'm going to do. And then it all come crashing down. It was kind of disheartening. So I got to a stage where I'm like, man, am I really going to do this anymore? I'm going to keep rocking up if I'm not 100% dedicated to making this happen.
Yep.
And that was the story. So then I ended up doing my left foot in my Lisfranc ligament a year and a day after. So 366 days apart from injuries, season-ending injuries.
Mm.
And I'm like, that's got to be a sign of some sort.
Yeah.
Like 1 year and one day, perfect to the day.
Mm.
How can I not take that as a sign?
Yeah, man, it's a really hard question, because just thinking with my injuries as well, and I'm like, there was times where I was like, is this a sign to like stop? Like when I was at 4 years, I'm like, are you telling me just like to wrap it up?
Mm.
Or do I have to not be a bitch and push through?
Yeah.
So I was always like battling like with like, okay, what was the sign? So yeah, it's very interesting where you decided. But that was the 1 year and one day was when you're like, nah, this is my, like, to wrap it up.
That was pretty much the nail in the coffin.
Yeah. And then how far from that till you had the jiu-jitsu? Like, was it like almost synchronicity where it was like, oh, this was supposed to happen straight away? Or?
Yeah, no. Okay. So I ended up having 2 years off of competition. Yep. And I went hard at the gym, opened up a personal training business, and I thought maybe the athletic career is not for me.
Mm-hmm.
But then I kept remembering this one vivid image that I'd had, and this is sort of a premonition sort of thing of, you know where you're meant to be.
Mm.
I used to kick goals in the front of my house at a place in Rouse Hill that we're renting in a big cul-de-sac, and it had two trees in the front yard as if it were goalposts.
Mm.
I was like, oh, this is cool. Dad always used to get the shits because it was kicking towards the front window in the house.
Yeah.
And I definitely broke the front window in the house, even after he told me 45 times not to do it.
You
gotta
break the window, nah.
Don't worry about it, Dad. I'm gonna be a champion goal kicker as a front rower.
Yeah, perfect.
It's fucking so stupid.
I like that.
But I used to envisage it as if I was kicking the winning goal for State of Origin. For some reason, I had it in my head and I heard the crowd go,
old were you at this?
16, maybe 15, 14, somewhere around that.
So already practicing visualization.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Somewhere around that stage. And I still get goosebumps with it now. Yeah. I was always thinking about that's going to be me. And then you listen to Conor McGregor's interview with Ariel Helwani, where they have that interview in the stadium. They're all the way up in the nosebleeds. I think it's very early on. He was saying, I used to have an image around kicking goals for Ireland in soccer. And there was a big crowd, there was a big roar, and it was all about me. But I didn't realize that I'd actually achieve that, but just in a different sport, in a different form.
Yep.
So if I go back to last year in September when I go to ADCC and there's 12,000 people there and a sold out crowd watching me do my thing, I didn't miss.
Yeah,
I just was in the wrong path. And I just had to stay true to the idea and recognize that, even though things that were put before me were telling me that I wasn't doing the correct thing.
They had to break a few windows first.
Yes, correct. and a few limbs.
Yeah.
A few limbs.
Cool. And then so then you've gotten into your mate's gym. He's told you to go to Sydney West.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still a white belt at this time.
Yeah. By the time I'd met Luke, I'd been training for about 7 months.
Yep.
I'd already competed a handful of times. Okay. I'd already done pretty well. I was just way bigger physically because of rugby league background and lifting weights and everything like that. So I had a lot of success very early on. And I went into the first session and I ended up doing a bolo to Curtis's back, which is like a sneaky sort of backflip take that shouldn't be happening from a white belt to a blue belt who was very, in his own right, very good in his own competitions, and he was basically smashing everybody.
Yeah.
And finished the end of the session and I walked up to the counter to sign up and Luke goes, where have you come from? What's the go here? And I'm like, I've been training at this gym for 7 odd months and, you know, just rocking up and having a good time. And he goes, you've never trained before. You've never done any other combat sport or anything. I played rugby league. And he goes, okay, that sort of makes sense. He goes, how serious do you want to take this? Because what you just did to him, I got submitted. I have to say that for Curtis. Because
he's going to fact check it.
Yeah. He's going to fact check. He's going to rewind. He did end up submitting me. But anyway, it's beside the point. And Luke said to me, he goes, he looks me dead in the face. I still remember it. And he goes, if you train here for 12 months, you win trials.
Hmm.
And I was like, all right, done.
Yeah, cool.
Sweet, no worries.
Was there a big difference for you from going from team sports to combat sports at first, just like individual sports?
There was an intermediary period where it was actually sort of aided by the fact that people in Ron Massey weren't taking it seriously.
Yeah.
It was aided in that,
you're
actually.
You're almost playing by yourself.
I kind of was. And I already was in that mindset that if I have to take ultimate responsibility for my performance, even if those others around me aren't taking the same responsibility for theirs. So I kind of had already slipped into a single competitive sport mindset in a way, almost harmoniously with setting me up to pursue jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I love about jiu-jitsu is that it still is a team sport.
Yeah.
It still is, but it's singularity competition, meaning that the onus is completely and utterly on you to do the sessions, eat the food, sleep the sleep, but you still get to be in that nice, harmonious team relationship.
Yeah.
Kind of get the best of both worlds.
Yeah. I didn't really understand that as much because it was sort of me and Dad like figuring out MMA on the road. So but it wasn't until, like, I've been to different teams, but it wasn't until I went to City Kickboxing where I experienced MMA as a team unit and it's family.
Yeah.
And I want to get back to Sydney West, just talking about that, the team, but I want to stay on your career for now. You went, so that was 3 months, early career. You went, was it blue belt five, was 3 months
there? I think I got my blue belt since training at Sydney West in like 8 months, nine months. It was pretty quick.
Yeah.
I actually got it from the previous instructor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yep. And then I started training at Sydney West. And then obviously we went through the secondary lockdown period. We were definitely not secretly training the entire time.
Yeah, no. Yeah, definitely, no. Definitely.
If anybody's watching.
We're listening.
Yeah.
Playing by the rules.
We'll throw the phone out the window. But yeah, and then I ended up getting my first super fight on Subversion, the card that's run in Sydney. That's probably the best one in Australia. Ended up beating a purple belt who was a lot bigger than me, and then getting my purple belt soon, Sean, after that. And this was all in the period of between the trials for our version of the Olympics called ADCC.
Yep.
And then slowly started progressing, kept competing. Because I just enjoy it. I enjoy putting myself out there and seeing what's going to happen as a result of harboring skills and developing skill sets and developing this as well, because that's just as much the same thing for the competition side.
For sure.
I enjoy the test of it. So I was very, very active in my early career, and I still am.
I'm just thinking, because the jiu-jitsu scene's changed so much since I was involved in it. Like, where I was just doing jiu-jitsu, like, not only styles, but also the whole one, because it's gotten bigger. So there's a lot more people. They've gotten better shows. I won't say nationalities that are used to make it not very fun to go to cons. Yeah. But it wasn't like a very nice sport. And like, it's just like anything with CrossFit, with jiu-jitsu, with, it's people trying to find something that they can belong to, right? Mm-hmm. And a community. Mm-hmm. And what is it about jiu-jitsu that just draws you to go there and train as hard as you can, be the best every day? Like, what is it that you love about it? That
I think it's the expression of skill development. Mm. And I think once you get to a certain stage in anything, you can see the mastery in all of it.
Yeah.
So I'd actually...
Oh, Musashi.
Yeah. Once you know the way, you know it all things.
Yes.
And I think that's the beautiful part about MMA, is you kind of get to do that and spin many plates at one time.
Mm.
And for me, it was easy because I transitioned from the mastery of a rugby league career, where there's multiple different facets and components in that, and then recognize that if I just apply that same mentality and mindset to jiu-jitsu, that I will have a much faster progression than somebody who hadn't had that experience beforehand.
Mm.
So I was thinking about the elements of what I needed to be good at as a front row in rugby league. And you have to be able to run hard, tackle hard. You have to be able to be aware of the game and sort of see where the field is going and where it's playing. And you also have to be aware of your opposite number and where their fatigue levels are at and what they're focused on, what they might be thinking of. And all of these constituent elements blended in very nicely to a jiu-jitsu match. Although it's 1v1, you still have those same elements. Mm. I have to be good on the feet. I have to be good on the ground. I have to be good at being aware of what they're thinking and how much fatigue I'm inducing on them to get them to respond a specific way that I want, that's advantageous to me.
Mm.
And if you can do that over the long run in any sport, you're going to be very, very good at it.
Yeah. So you obviously went, we're just talking about it off air, like how many sessions you're doing, 13 sessions a week of just jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not only just rocking up to the sessions. Like, anyone can rock up to 13 sessions, but if it's not with intent.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't matter how. So what's the difference in your approach to training, I guess?
I look at it as I have to be good everywhere, because the moment that I am not competent and confident in one aspect of the game, I'll find myself there subconsciously in a match.
Yeah.
That's what I want to eliminate.
Because you're fearful of it, right? So correct. You're thinking about that situation so much and not wanting to be there, you're going to end up there.
Where your attention goes, your energy will flow.
Yeah.
So if I'm thinking I don't want to be in a really deep armbar with a big 112 kilo guy on my arm,
I'm
probably going to find myself in that situation. And I think the stress testing element of training is the beautiful part about the sport, is because you can do it in a very safe way.
Yeah.
You're not getting punched or kicked in the face where you have long-term damage. I mean, if you let an armbar go too far, obviously there's repercussions and consequences. But at the same time, back to the intent sort of thing, it's where do I need to work on? What do I need to continuously improve?
Mm.
What am I the worst at and what am I the best at?
And when you're training, do you push towards your strengths or do you go towards your weaknesses?
I, leading up to a competition, will go A game only and just start to hone in on everything that I'm going to do. And I also implement that with a visualization exercise of thinking about what it's going to be like on the day for that competition and employing that within my training, because I know that I'm going to be using my best moves and getting to the best positions, the most advantageous positions. Outside of those main training blocks, I actually try to put myself in as bad positions as possible. Depending on the training partner, obviously there's not many people walking around our size, our weight, our skill, and our athleticism within
jiu-jitsu. Don't say our. Try to put me in our, like, get that our out of here. It's
with
you.
With the lack of athletes available specifically from like other sports and bits and pieces. And there's not going to be many people that can test me physically in terms of strength and speed and everything else. So you have to take it upon yourself to put yourself in an even perspective with that training partner.
Yep.
And that's kind of the magic of it all, because you could be training with a 60 kilo female and still get good work in.
Yeah.
You can still develop yourself. And that's why people who show up, as you said, with no intention to sessions, they don't get any better. They're just spinning the wheels. They're not progressing. They're not planning on how they want to articulate certain things within a certain sequence. Or I think you alluded to it earlier, where you have to be deluded a little bit. You also have to be a little bit gone to it.
Yep.
Where I'll be driving home going through six different sequences that I had in the training session, and I'm like, all right, this needs to be fixed, this needs to be fixed, this needs to be fixed. Even eating breakfast, you're like, fuck, what if I did that takedown that way? I'm going to try that today.
But that's the only way you'd be the best, right? By being obsessive with it. Like
exactly.
In saying that, just the fact of pure numbers, how are you remembering all of it? Like I was talking about this the other day as well, that I run like 2-3 diaries because like between CKB systems and then like especially the jiu-jitsu systems, trying to keep up with all the moves and everything, man, it fries my head.
Yeah, of course.
Like, so is there a way, do you just remember it all? Because I definitely don't. Like, I know it's repetitions of obviously, but specific moves and specific details, do you ever write anything down? Or
being autistic definitely helps.
Spectrum-nated
as,
is
as a first. As a first.
Yeah. Okay.
One, with the tism definitely helps.
Yeah.
Two, being solely absolved in one section. Mm-hmm. So I only focus on jiu-jitsu. I only don't have to worry about kickboxing or anything like that. That definitely helps.
Yeah.
But I found the biggest ROI is actually teaching and articulating it to other people.
Yeah.
If definitely. I can teach it, I know it very well.
Yep.
And that's why I try and test myself, and that's why I like run the community and stuff that I do now, is because I'm getting so many questions. Yeah. I get slammed with questions, 20 to 50 questions a week, where I have to test my skills and test my knowledge. Yeah. And if I can't figure it out, this is something that I learned from another hot Aussie prospect, Isaac Michel.
Yeah.
He trains with us at Sydney West as well when he's in Australia.
Yeah.
When we were asking him questions after a seminar, he said, let me feel it.
Yeah.
So he was like, let me feel the position, I'll tell you what I do.
Yeah.
And it's a very intuitive sort of nature. And I think to your point, where it goes to analytical is where you burn out.
Yeah.
But if you saturate yourself in the thing that you're doing completely and wholly, you'll actually start to pick it up intuitively.
Yeah.
To a certain degree. And then you polish the things that aren't intuitive.
Yep. Because one of the things that's interesting about teaching as well is that something that you do, like how you do the move, might work for you, but someone will do it completely different. So when you're teaching, you can't just teach it how you know how to do it. You have to be able to figure it out for their body type, their strength. So that makes it, that's the understanding of the move. But I actually heard that, I think it was a math teacher that told me, it's like, if you can teach your like decimate the mass equation. So I definitely couldn't teach it, so I didn't do well enough. But she told me that.
You can pass that information on, whether you apply it or not is completely different. And that, to Luke's credit, our coach, is something that he's phenomenal at.
Yes.
Being able to get people off the street who are hobbyists, who are run-of-the-mill people, who have desk jobs or trade jobs, and still be able to induct them in a system where they don't feel overwhelmed, but also apply that to world championship level athletes at the same time, really without segregating or diluting it as much as it needs to. It really works as a fruitful system. And I think that's the way that we go about it, is the best way to go about it, because we're really focused on what works, why does it work, and then what do you do if they do next?
Yeah, my jiu-jitsu definitely increases every time I'm training there. And I'm like, I love jiu-jitsu. Like, I don't know why. Like, it's, obviously, I've been doing it since I was a kid. Like, I love striking for the fact that you can knock someone out. Like, there's something about that helps. Even getting punched in the face, there's something about it.
Like, come on.
There's something about it. But but jiu-jitsu will always be my martial art that I love the most. There's the level of detail, being able to stay so calm in the chaos, being able to train as hard as you can. Anyone that asks me what they should put their kids in with a martial art or anything, I always say jiu-jitsu.
I agree.
Not even so much for the defense side. It's just like discipline, like turning up to training every day. You're not going to get as injured as like wrestling or kickboxing. Mm-hmm. Like,
it's the fluidity of it as well. And it's interesting that you said that about striking versus grappling, is that striking for you is – the outcome is the interesting thing.
Yeah.
Versus jiu-jitsu is the process is the interesting thing. And I think that it's a little bit overplayed in like the self-help culture, but if you start to fall in love with the way that it works rather than what comes from the way that it works, you will do it as long as you need to. And if you do it as long as you need to, you'll get really good. The better you get, the more you enjoy it. The more you enjoy it, the better you'll get.
And in saying that, going to City Kickboxing made me fall in love with this process of striking.
Yeah.
I hadn't experienced that before. And that, I think that's why I fell in love with City Kickboxing straight away, is because I knew that I hadn't seen someone teach striking like jiu-jitsu before.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So every time you go to jiu-jitsu, the drills and everything, they'll say, like, you do this to affect this, and then you, like, leads into this, and then you drill that over and over again. I hadn't seen a striking system like that before. It's like, this is how we run. Afterwards, I'll show you something, like, what there's something.
Is there something Eugene has formulated on his own?
Yeah. Oh, well, no. Like, I he would be angry if I said that he formulated himself. Like, they have a whole family tree that's like,
oh, cool.
Yeah. For New Zealand, like, the kickboxing background, it's crazy. Like, it starts at Lagar, goes on to Lolo, like that, just this crazy.
There's a lineage just like jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So that's, I think that's why straight away I was like, no, this is where I'm supposed to be. And I've made a joke about it before, but when I first was going to New Zealand, I wasn't expecting just to meet a bunch of geniuses.
Yeah. Of course.
But when I went there, I was like, man, these guys, just the way they look at martial arts is so beautiful. And like, it's the same with jiu-jitsu. So
I think that's why they call it an art.
Yeah.
Definitely. I really think that is the case though.
Someone asked me that and they're like, are you into art? I was like, martial arts.
But I think that is representative of it. It's kind of difficult to separate like rugby league and rugby union and say that they are arts. Obviously there's artistic implications within that sport itself. Like I'm sure Nathan could break it down and show all the intricate details of why through the past to this person instead of the other person. Yeah. And I've been around the sport long enough to know that if they're looking this way, they're going this way.
Yeah.
If they're looking this way,
it's very simple. Intuitive, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You see Jonathan Thurston back in the day and he doesn't even look and he just goes like this and lands in the bread basket at the next guy and then they end up scoring. But the way that you are forced to articulate your body in an artistic manner through the martial arts, it's very distinct. We could almost do it as a dance in a sense, and some people even call it that.
Yep.
That's the interesting part about it.
And I really get that feel when I talk with Israel about it, like, because he obviously had his like breakdancing background and then how he talks about it with fighting.
Mm.
And man, you see some of the guys at the gym, like, that are doing that, and you go, man, that's beautiful to see, like, how they're picking where their shots are going. And But I don't want to get too far away off from tangent. But so now you're training for your trials coming up.
Mm-hmm.
3 weeks.
Yeah, just under
3 weeks. Where is that held?
Singapore.
Oh well, Oh okay.
It was in Australia last year.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Talk about stars aligning. It was meant to be in some of the, because it's Asian Oceania, so it's all in the whole region. So it could be in Japan, could be in Kazakhstan, could be in New Zealand. Although they probably never hold it in New Zealand.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's Talk About Stars Aligning. They had it at the Blacktown Leisure Centre, like 5 minutes down the road from my house at Stanhope Gardens. And I was like, there's no way an international competition.
I was just about to say, like, the next one's in Singapore. This one they had at Blacktown.
Awesome. At the pools where all local people are just looking like, what's going on with all these guys with fucked up heads and whatever else. And it was funny. I forgot my passport. You have to show that you are a citizen of the region. Otherwise, you're not allowed to compete in that area. And I forgot it. And because I'd done so much visualization work and the lead up to that competition, it was a big, important sort of thing. And I wasn't meant to win. Becoming a purple belt, only been training for 19 months. The guys I'm going against have been training for decades.
Yeah,
they're all black belts. They're all had competed in that rule set a lot more than I had. They'd have much more experience than I had. And I didn't let any of that come in, because every time I was driving to training, it's not fair to say every time, but very often when I was driving to training from my place to Penrith, I would get this premonition vision of me running to Luke on the coach's chair, hugging him, and then throwing him in the air in celebration. Yep. And I didn't know if that was going to be win number one, win number two, win number three, because it's a round robin tournament. You have to win your way to the end. But I just had this sense of this feeling that it was going to be an awesome day. And when I got there, even if I left the passport, that usually is alarm bells, like, oh my God, torture, blah, blah, blah. Didn't even turn an eye to it. Yeah. I was like, all right, I know that this is set in stone. And it was interesting to talk about what Liam was joking about with retirement. I had come to that day saying, today's my day. I just got to wait for time to catch up.
Yeah.
I had already seen it a number of times.
Yeah.
And if you go into the the physics of it, if you see something up here, it's not seeing it with your eyes. It's not seeing it in a third dimensional sense. Yeah. So where that exists, time doesn't actually exist. Yep. So you actually have experienced it a number of times.
Yep. I mentioned this with Andrew. He asked me about my fight, and I had pictured myself so many times standing over the top of that guy doing that celebration that I wasn't emotional about it after the fight because it was almost as if it was being replayed.
Uh-huh.
So it was like, it was pretty crazy. It was actually surreal, to be honest. I didn't, there was no real emotions or feeling. Like, I was just like, oh, this is just another day. Went out the back. It was like, yeah, cool. Like, it was pretty, pretty surreal.
It's cool. That's what people most notably describe as the flow state.
Yeah.
There's no other way to describe it. And I think it's when you're completely in line with everything that's going on and you've already projected and future casted that existence. I think because your body already adapts to it. Like what we imagine, remember when you're having a dream and you fall.
Yeah.
It feels legitimate.
Yeah.
Of course it does. But that's because feelings and visions and visualization isn't of this realm.
Yeah.
And we actually can experience it. Like if I was to ask somebody, show me where anger exists, they can't. They can't pull it out and show me a physical representation. Yep. They could show me something that makes them angry, but they can't show me the actual emotion. And that's why if we experience it enough, it does actually start to crystallize into this area.
Yeah. And just like... When you're talking, like you can, how would I word it? You can see that you've obviously done a lot of work on yourself, or like obviously a lot of reading. Like, but I know that you do your high performance coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that come from? I know you started off as fitness coach. Did you say fitness?
Yeah. Started in the gym. I have loved the gym since 14 years of age. Again, it was another one of those stories where. High school was a bit rough, still a bit shy, still a bit weird, still a bit quirky, but you knew that if you could adopt that energetics in towards the gym, it would be a useful benefit.
Yep.
And I think like some kids from disenfranchised areas, they start getting into fights and other bits and pieces. I was fortunate I didn't get into that sort of crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I just put all my energy into the gym and I'm like, if I can physically transform myself, I'll be able to mentally transform myself.
Mm.
I can now say that looking back, but I sort of knew that that was a good investment of time.
Yep.
And so I loved lifting weights, and I loved being able to teach people how to do it as well, to share the experience that I had. I see so many people, 80% or whatever it is, the population might not be that high, but they're unhealthy, overweight. They don't like what they see in the mirror. They're not physically capable in any sort of sport or any aspect of, even if it's croquet or table tennis, at least being competent in something. You don't see that today's day and age.
Yep.
And I was like, I want to be a person who impacts that on the back end so I can teach people how to get the joy and experience of what I have every single day. Then I moved into that, and then I realized that it wasn't the people who couldn't count calories. It wasn't the people who couldn't show up to weightlifting sessions. It was the people who had this all messed up.
Yep.
I would show them that they'd lost 9 kilos on the scale, and they would still have all these doubts and fears and things. You could physically show them the evidence. But because this was here in a scramble, they would always end up self-sabotaging.
Mm.
They would always end up going back to square one because they didn't have the belief. The thing that most people say, oh, I've got to see it to believe it. No, you have to believe it to see it first.
Yeah.
That's the turnaround on that statement.
And so that's what's led you into trying to fix that like issue.
Yeah,
I
became fascinated with that. I became obsessed with that side of thing. And I did have a lot of that. I used to listen to Eric Thomas and Tony Robbins and Alan Watts when I started the gym as like a motivational adjunct to lifting weights, and just became obsessed with it with that. I'm like, wow, I've been able to do this vicariously without really even focusing on it, just by harnessing it on this one area.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw so many people struggling with it. I'm like, wow, what would the world be like if you could manipulate the way that people see situations and then they could transform their physical reality as a result of how they see it. It's so easy for people.
Yeah, because their perception is their reality, right? Yeah.
So exactly right.
Trying to change their perception on how they're looking and feeling about themselves, how they look at what they're doing.
Makes the biggest difference because that's the big domino. In my opinion, that's the big domino. Because hindsight is, you look back on any event in your life and at the time you were going through it, it's the worst thing that ever happened to you. You turn around 5 years, 2 years, 3 years later and you go, that was what I needed.
Yeah.
I needed that to shake me up. Yep. I needed that to change directions. So where I get to in my mindset stuff is I'm like, well, if you could see it 2, 3 years, 5 years down the track, why don't you see it now?
Mm.
Why don't you see whatever's coming to your reality, that the thing that you're meant to be experiencing? Because A, you haven't gone through anything else, so that wasn't meant for you. And B, if you live within that, everything that comes to you is purposeful.
Yeah, because you can also, like, if you get, like you said, that people look at it 5 years, if you actually get trapped in that, like, that's basically depression, right? Like,
yeah.
if you'll just get trapped in that and then you don't use that as a propellant to mm-hmm. change direction, then that's where you're just going to get stuck.
That's where the victimhood comes in.
Yeah.
That's where you blame one specific scenario for all the outcomes in your life mm-hmm. as a result of experiencing that one yep. thing versus, and it's just up here, yep. it's not changing anything about physical reality. That was the best thing I could have gone
yeah,
through
yeah.
because this, rather than this is the worst thing I could have gone through because this.
Yep.
Everybody goes, oh, well, what's the worst that could happen? What are you thinking like that?
Yeah, what's the best that could happen?
What if it happened better than I could have even imagined?
Yep.
And then you go forth with that energy and you go, you know what? What if it does happen better than I could imagine? Maybe I'll start that business. Maybe mm-hmm. I'll jump in the deep end and give that sport a crack. Maybe I ask that girl out. Maybe I take the plunge and go for the promotion.
Mm.
Maybe I try something new. Because as far as I'm concerned, if you just stay within what you know, you're going to experience the same thing.
Yeah.
You have to dive into the depths of the unknown where the fear is the blockage, because how would you have ever experienced what you've experienced if you let fear overcome you? You know, I don't know about that. That's where all the cool fun shit is.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was going to be a success in jiu-jitsu. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I could have had a good guess that my athletic background would have helped me to some degree, but that I would find the best coach in Australia, that I would find the best team in Australia, mm. that I would come into this expression of mindset and sport and everything, it would all communicate perfectly, that my rugby league career would fall apart on purpose through actions that I chose to be able to connect to a higher version to say, no, you're meant to be over here.
Yeah.
Because I still don't know what the outcome of jiu-jitsu is going to be. I don't know if I have a catastrophic injury or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I know that it's going to set me up for the next phase of life where the next platform goes for.
Yeah, I feel you. It's like that, man. Yeah, right on. Because I'm at the same thing where right now I just know that when I'm aligned, like if I'm like on the right path mentally and I'm pushing myself and doing the right things and everything, opportunities just happen. And I'm like starting to just say yes to a lot more opportunity. I used to, like, because I'm younger, bro, I'm a massive introvert. Like even doing these podcasts and stuff, it takes a lot of energy for me.
Yeah.
So talking to people, like those small conversations and stuff like that, like you know, like having a conversation with a random person, like, is massive. Like,
and they know more about you than you could possibly know about them. Yeah. They come to the conversation loaded. Yeah. You're like, oh, bro, settle.
But I've been trying to just like take a lot more. Not chances, but stuff's just presenting itself, and I normally where I'd go like, nah, just stay in my comfort zone. Like I know fighting, and so I just keep fighting. But now like opportunities will come up, and I was like, fuck it, let's just go. I fail? Like no,
exactly. Because like, who's to know what will come of it?
Yeah,
you have no idea. Yeah, okay, it might blow up in your face, but
yeah.
that will give you another confirmation to say, okay, maybe not that path. Maybe not yet.
Yeah,
I like saying that. Maybe not yet. Yeah.
And I found that like the opportunities become exponential. Like, when you do one thing and like you're aligned and it just goes bang, bang, bang and goes through the roof.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's the same. It's not linear, right? It's not the same the other way as well.
Yeah.
So when you start fucking up, it happens real fast.
Yeah, exactly.
It's either up or down. So
yeah. And that's what Carl Jung talks about with the individuation process. He talks about integrating your shadow side.
Mm.
So the things of your psyche, of your consciousness that you don't want to look at.
Yeah,
that you don't want to peel up the rug and see what's under there. Specific things make you angry. Specific things make you sad. Specific things you want to avoid at all costs. Mm. Because you have to be willing to integrate those sorts of things because they will give you the most powerful lessons.
Yeah.
And for even in our experience, I was super shy as a kid, didn't want to speak to people. It was very daunting for me. And I was like, no, I have to figure out a way around this because otherwise... And imagine if I didn't, I could be one of these jiu-jitsu people that have no personal brand, no nothing, struggling, all that sort of thing. And
well, funny you say that as well, because NRL's like...
Yeah.
you know what? This is what I really appreciate about the Penrith Panthers. Like a lot of people hate them because of their being like this, whatever branding. Like I know them personally. It's like they're not those people that they're branding themselves.
Yeah.
But they're the first ones that are going... Oh, we're going to be someone that's different. We're not going to just be, hi, my name is like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah. And I feel like that's what they try and push with the media, like the having to be media trained. I get that it's because they don't want their teams getting in trouble.
Of course, sponsorship complications.
Yeah. But then also, you when you try and like push that down, it explodes out on the other side. Like, so yeah. It's interesting that you found that your own, like, I guess, what, persona in jiu-jitsu and being like, and having the confidence to, and that's why I mentioned confidence as well, but having the confidence to express it.
Yeah, exactly, so, right. It was one of those things where my best mate Zach always says to me, he goes, you're the perfect person to become famous out of this shit because you won't let it go to your head because your head's already big enough. There's nothing else left to fit in there. And he goes, but you'll deal with it in an appropriate way where it won't distract you from the actual goal.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, some people do find massive success in whatever area they go into and they allow that to become the thing that they chase, mm-hmm. whereas I'm not interested in that.
Yep.
I know that it's a natural byproduct of what I'm doing and what I'm creating. Right. I'm allowing for that, but I won't ever let that manipulate me into signing deals that I don't want to sign or promoting things I don't want to promote or taking opportunities where I perceive there would be a beneficial outcome and getting myself in trouble and all those sorts of things. I'm pretty intuitive in that sense where I know where I need to go and what feels right and what doesn't. Even in the sense of my picking an apparel sponsor.
Yeah.
I had a guy, Doug, from Western Australia, who's messaging me and reaching out and doing bits and pieces, sending me free kit. And I didn't really think much of it. And I was looking for sponsorships and that sort of thing. And I had mentioned one to my previous sponsor that I want to do pink.
Yep.
And they're like, let's finish off this other order first and then we'll do the pink thing. I had hundreds of people sending me messages like, bro, we got to do the pink shit. Like pink is mad. Like whatever you're doing with that, that looks great. On that day, Doug had sent me a pair of shorts and it landed on my doorstep. And that was the sign.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I meant to be doing it with him. And then to go even deeper into that sort of stuff, I do a lot of work with like numerology and not too much on astrology, but I think
I was about to say you're a big astrology.
Not massively. I think it does have some benefit. I think to be aware of your patterns and your inclinations based on when you chose to be born. Even science backs this now that the egg doesn't open for the first or the fastest sperm.
Yeah.
It actually sends a chemical out to the specific sperm that it wants to choose. So everybody goes, I didn't choose to be born. Yes, you did.
Yeah.
You were the twinkle in your dad's eye the first time he saw your mum.
Yeah. See, every time I annoy my dad, like he's like, to think you were the fastest. Like,
Well, now you can tell him. I wasn't the fastest, but I was the chosen one. And I think that's so important. But I do work with numerology and I'm a life path number 8. And it makes no surprises to me that H is the 8th letter of the alphabet.
Mm.
HPU, it starts with an H, and Heavyweight, which was the brand, was the one reaching out to me, calling me and going, knocking on the door. And even tiny synchronicities like that that I notice all the time, I've set some targets for myself and 58 has to be associated with that number. Mm. And I also read it backwards. So if it says 85, 58, that's the core number of what I'm looking at. And when I was driving here today, I drove past number 85 over there. I had no reason to look to my right for whatever reason. I look up 85. I'm like, all right, this is going to be a good episode.
Yeah.
And reminding yourself constantly of those things rather than the reasons that you can't. It's the reasons that you can. It could be something as trivial as seeing number plates with a number.
Yeah. See, I've started like looking at signs a lot more lately. Like nothing big, but I was like intuitively as well. Mm. Like you go, oh, no, that's where I'm supposed to be right now. It's like you see something and you go, oh, no, this is, And there's a book, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, if you haven't read it. That's actually really cool. Like, it talks about those signs. Just interesting, you know, the Aboriginal culture is very interesting, like for how old they are. But I think that's, you know, like when you're not looking at the signs, one of the things was your soul will always give you signs of like the direction you're supposed to take.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll keep telling you and keep telling you. And then if you don't listen, it'll go to sleep and see you in the next life.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
And I was like, oh, damn.
Yeah.
That's heavy.
And you think
of like some of those people that aren't like, maybe I'm not saying that I believe in the soul or whatever, like or the next life or anything like that, but just even, it's the same with people's belief systems. Whether you believe in God or not, it's like, it's the fact that you believe in it that makes it real.
Exactly.
So I think just believing in those signs and listening to your intuitions, I was like, that's
I think about that a lot. And I think, well, why are we here? What gives us purpose? What allows us to see that we're aligned with our vision? And why do we even have these things in the first place? Like, it would be much more convenient if nothing had existed at all.
Yeah.
Because this is crazy.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. There's a 1 in 6 trillion chance that the sperm meets the egg at the exact time to create this.
Yeah.
And the amount of synchronicities that have to happen for yourself and myself to meet, you think about the extrapolation of all the things that had happened. Like, for us to meet, your dad had to get you into jiu-jitsu when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And I love this. I read about this recently.
Bro, you're tripping me out, eh?
I read about this recently. This one will fucking blow your mind. So if a star is 10,000 light years away, the deal was made 10,000 years ago that you look up and see that light emitting from that star when you decide to look up for no reason.
Yeah, because you're looking into the past when you look at the light.
10,000 years ago. Nah, and it takes 10,000 light years to get to you. So why did you decide to look at that specific part of an expansive black sky that exists and see a tiny little white dot that seems insignificant?
Yeah.
But then people want to go away from listening to this sort of stuff and think, oh, I don't have a purpose. I'm not here for anything big. Mm. Yeah, you fucking are.
Yeah.
If you can make star contracts that are 10,000 light years away and have that meet your retina to give you a specific response that thing exists, how do you see meaninglessness in this?
Yeah.
And then for people that think about this sort of thing and they think, oh, this is a bit far for me, this is how you get aligned with creating what you are here for. Because everybody's here for a purpose, whether they like it or not.
Yep.
And if you're even just a little bit connected to that sort of thing, think about how your world changes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go to work and I'm going to be the best worker ever.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the best employee. Not everybody has to be a multimillionaire. Not everybody has to be a fighter. Not everybody has to be. But if you're working at Coles stacking shelves, I'm going to stack these shelves the best they fucking could be because I have a divine understanding that somebody's going to see that and appreciate it. And it might make their day a little bit better.
Yep.
It could be so benign, so little, so insignificant to anybody else. But to you, it matters. To you, like you drive past somebody's lawn and they've done it really nice.
Bro, that's a crazy thing to think about. I was watching this guy. He stands out there every day.
Yeah.
And just like his lawn is perfect. And not only do I just go, damn, that's a nice lawn.
Yeah.
But you just go, man, he really cares about it.
100%. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, I couldn't give a shit about my grass.
And then I look at my grass, I was like, shit.
Motherfucker.
He got me again.
But that's the mastery thing, right?
Yeah.
Because he's mastered the art of the lawn.
Yeah.
And it sounds stupid to me even, but I see a thick edge and I'm like,
okay. But it goes back to the thing. If you see it broadly, you see it in all things.
Exactly. And I think that's where, to go back to what you said, where there's fear that stops people from taking those actions. That's on the other side.
Yeah.
That's opening yourself up to the possibility and the understanding that could exist.
Mm.
So even looking at something as trivial as the way that this guy cuts grass can have meaningful impact on the way that you live your life. Because you're like, why does this guy care about the way that his green things are organized?
Yeah.
It doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
But if he gives so much passion and energy to something that I don't give a fuck about, why don't I adopt that into my lifestyle and think, wow, what do I really care about? What would I really want to create? What would I really want to bring to this.
Yeah, and that's I understand it is hard to find what, like, especially when you're getting stuck in the mundane, but day to day. Like, I understand that you can just become jaded, but I'm trying to think, that's also why I've been trying different things as well.
Yeah.
I know that martial arts are, well, especially MMA at the professional level, that's not like, you have to be realistic. It's not a forever thing. And that's something you battle with all the time. I was speaking with Volkanovski the other day about this as well. And we don't have longevity in this sport.
Yeah.
And that's a scary thought, right? Mm. So no, it's the same with rugby league where you've trained your whole life at this one thing, your personal, well, who identity becomes, I'm a fighter, right?
Yeah.
So that if you're not prepared for that or talking about what you have afterwards. So I've been trying everything else, not saying that I'm ready to retire.
Yeah.
But I'm just knowing, I do not like doing gardens.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know what I mean? Unless you've tried the different shit. Yeah. How do you know? What? Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. It's interesting you bring up the identity thing because that was what I struggled with. I was a rugby league player.
Mm.
But that's such an infinitesimally small thing to label yourself as.
Yep. Yeah.
You're this crazy fucking thing that can do literally anything. Yeah. Like if you're a slow learner, you could learn to make a knife like old mate just did.
Hold the point. Yeah, yeah. But this guy just custom made this knife for me. This is pretty sick. So shout out to Sacred Blades.
The logo on there is pretty cool.
It is. It's got a fire starter. We're going to have to start a fire afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever these carpet tiles are doing will be sweet.
Thank you, brother, the man. So back to it. So yeah, the mastery.
It might take you 6 years longer than the guy that did this knife, yeah. But does that matter?
Yeah.
No, absolutely not, because you have this infinite possibilities. Like maybe you gravitate towards certain things a lot harder, which I have with jiu-jitsu and league and you have with MMA. Mm. But you could literally create that out of nothing. You could just decide you're going to do crochet or origami or something one day. And then eventually in 10 years' time, you'll be a master at it.
Yeah, that's why I really appreciate, I don't know, this is a bit of a tangent, but really appreciate the Japanese culture because of that. Like
just mastering everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever that you're doing, you're trying to do it to the best.
Yeah.
So do you think, how long do you think jiu-jitsu-wise, you would have, in the tank?
Jiu-jitsu is a cool one because there's no crazy catastrophic injuries regarding the mind.
Is heavyweight actually, is it the same with jiu-jitsu as it is in MMA, whereas the average age is a bit older?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think with regards MMA is because we're just less technical, a lot slower.
And all you have to do is punch someone in the face.
Exactly.
And if you can punch really hard, you don't have to be as good.
Yeah, 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 exactly. You drop their skill level on all other means.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I think regards jiu-jitsu, because it's not as damaging for the mind, you could do it for a lot longer. You always have an out. I mean, in MMA, you kind of do have an out. You could always tap and give up by letting someone submit you, but the specific people that do MMA aren't going to go down like that.
They're
going to go down fighting. There's a specific characteristic of person that does the sport. I could be competitive. Exactly. I could be competitive well into my 40s and maybe my late 40s as well.
Mm,
so I've got a lot of fishing line left.
Yeah. I can't remember what you said, but talking about the characteristics and I think it was, I can't remember why, but I just remember being that angry kid. I think it was you talking about how you can put your emotions. I think it was anger.
Mm.
When you're talking about anger, and I was an angry kid.
As
a lot of young males are,
at the world.
Yeah, doing dumb shit, blaming, always ready to go, just attack. And that's why I love martial arts and tell everyone to get into martial arts, because it gave me an avenue. Not saying that I was fighting out, or trying to tell people to stop fighting on the streets or anything like that, but it was just my release. And
it's an expression.
Yeah, and that's where Peace Through Violence comes from, my shirt.
Yeah.
Because that's where I'm calmest now. Like when I'm being able to be violent in the gym, I get peace from that.
Absolutely.
And then I'm calm outside of the gym.
Yeah, so. And then you turn into dad mode.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've expressed that.
Yeah, and even that, the switch, I understand some people can't turn that switch on and off. James Tahuna, I remember during his fight career, man, I've spoken to him more in the last 5 years, once he'd retired, than I did in 15 years of knowing him while he was fighting.
Wow.
Because he wasn't able to turn the switch on and off.
Interesting.
He was just in kill mode
all
the time. Well, that's what I think anyway.
And that speaks to the longevity as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's rough, man. I find it real cool that I've obviously been doing it a long time and I'm able to turn on dad mode and I was in a snowman suit yesterday.
That was funny. That was so funny. My daughter. Do you want to hear a snowman?
Yeah, the acoustics were bad in the house. But that's why the notes are off.
The voice wouldn't have pushed the gold buzzer.
No.
It's really interesting, actually, the dichotomy. And this is the cool part, because we all have this innately within us. We all have the switch for go time, and we all have the switch for down time. We just have to recognize how to express it.
Yep.
Dorian Yates, a bodybuilder and a big motivator of mine with the gym early on, was clinical in that. He was known as the Shadow. His nickname was the Shadow, because he'd rock up, he'd win, obliterate everybody. He wouldn't do any post interviews, no media, no nothing. And he'd fuck off to the UK back to train in the little shithole that he came from the day after.
Yeah.
He didn't celebrate, didn't have any cheat meals, didn't have any winning gestures or anything like that. And then since then, he's finished his career. This is a long time ago. He's competing in the early 90s. He basically eats mushrooms, does ayahuasca, and then rides bikes in Spain, in Marbella, and lives as this peace hippie guy.
Is he still huge?
he's still pretty jacked.
Because
but he's not,
I just
he's
imagine
not,
a bike like
yeah. like on The Simpsons when Krusty's on the little bike. But it's interesting to listen to his interviews now versus his interviews back then where it was all smash, crash, destroy.
Yeah.
And now it's more the consciousness aspect of what we were speaking about, like the mindset and being able to put yourself in the situation that you need to, kind of like a chameleon in a sense, not to say that you're doing it in a negative way, but being able to allow yourself to relax and enjoy and turn off and then flick that switch when you need it. I remember we talked about it, where there's certain things that you and I both do when we're approaching a competition, whether it be walking to the cage or walking to the mats for me. We have to generate this secondary thing.
Yeah.
And I start to do that. My vision goes blurry. I start to unfocus. And then whatever this thing, if you name it, you name it. If you don't, you don't.
Yeah, the alter ego, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever this thing is, it starts to come in and take over. And I think that's an intelligent way of looking at it because it's not you as the identity.
Yeah.
It's this thing that comes that you allow and then it turns off.
Yeah. And you can also put it into everything. So like I was, I work with David Neath who was teaching us about the alter ego. Actually, I want to get him on the show. It would be really cool. But being able to create that alter ego, like Tyson Pedro has losses. Tyson Pedro is like fucked up. But when I become Ronan or like become that alter ego, it's like clinical, like samurai, like nothing can't be beat and unstoppable.
Yeah.
And like that. But then you can also do it with fatherhood. You can also do it with like anything that you do and create these things that you can become in that moment. So like and like take perfect examples of what you want to be like, and I found that when I eventually you can just I as Tyson can do that.
Yeah, exactly.
But like when you're starting out, like, or and that's also why I go away for camps, because when I am becoming that personality, that doesn't translate to fatherhood.
No, it doesn't align.
Yeah, and if I go to the gym and I'm smash, bash, and then come home and do the dishes, it doesn't really like...
There's crayon on the walls.
Yeah, some people have figured that out. Yeah. I haven't. So like that's how I really have to differentiate the two. And it is hard.
Yeah.
With like, because now I'm really missing the babies and like...
Of course.
It is getting to that time where so... Yeah, everyone's figuring it out, right?
Yeah, like- yeah, exactly. It's interesting how you split yourself into to many different things. I do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Like, who do I want to be as a business owner? Because that's a different subsect of my personal life. Who do I want to be as a partner?
Yeah.
And that's a very different dynamic. Although jiu-jitsu is a lot more laid back and a lot more less intense, it has its intensities in itself. But I'm not trying to approach it the exact same way.
Yep.
I'm trying to figure out a way that I could best serve this situation. And I think that's where you don't blur the lines where the guy at the coffee shop gets your coffee order wrong and you go, and you're like, you're going
to...
I'm going to sit down in front of you, bitch. And I think that's important because you don't... You start to distract the identity from even you as yourself.
Yeah.
Like I'm not... I appear as this skin suit thing in front of you, but I don't. That's not my whole existence. There's there's a soul there. There's an incarnation here. Whether you believe in reincarnation or anything like that, that all exists. Yeah. There's feelings and emotions and different bits and pieces. And this is why it's so cool because you don't anchor yourself to I am this person with these many failures. I am this person with these many fuck ups. I am this person with these many mistakes.
Yeah.
It's fluid.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be the guy who walks into the ring, oh, how many losses do I have again? Oh, this. And people do that. People who compete very poorly, they do that.
Yeah.
They'll look at their record. They'll look at the other guy's record.
Yeah.
They'll look at the other guy's Instagram. They'll focus on what he's doing.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yeah. You know what's so interesting as well is like you see those guys that go on these unstoppable like runs like Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
Like Jose Aldo. Like these like absolute champions and then they have that loss. And then it's like they believed so much that they were indestructible.
Mm-hmm.
Then once someone proved that was wrong, it was like their belief system almost, you know what I mean?
And Mike
then they
Tyson.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, so who knows? Like I'm not a sports psychologist. But
I think that's where they identify with I am a winner.
Yeah.
And then as soon as that goes away, it's proved physically that you are not
a
winner.
Yeah, yeah.
In that one tiny little subsect aspect, then that starts to fuck with them internally.
Yep.
I think that's why the sports psychology thing is becoming more and more popular and why people are adopting these sort of strategies to think about things correctly and have a unique perspective rather than identifying with a loss or even identifying with a win because they're both dangerous.
Mm.
It's interesting. McGregor is actually famous for saying that. He goes, you rest on a win and you become complacent.
Yeah.
You rest on a loss and you never get back up.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that he has the ability to say that, but then maybe not apply it.
Yeah. Do as I say, not as I do.
It's very easy to give advice rather than take advice, especially of your own,
Of
your own volition. That's the interesting thing.
So the outcome for the ADCC trials, how many countries is it? Sorry to go off of attention, but
I don't know.
We will get stuck in traffic if we...
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I don't know exactly how many... I don't know exactly how many countries, but it's Asian and Oceania involved. And for the world titles, there's four regions. So America, South America, Europe and Africa are all bound up, and then Asian and Oceania are all bound up together.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So you win this, Singapore, and what's... Would this be your second trials? Because you went to... You won trials last time, and then you lost to who's arguably the best...
He's one of the best, one of the best ever, Philippe Penner. So he'd been doing similar thing, jiu-jitsu in diapers.
Yeah.
And he'd been a black belt 5 times longer than I'd been training.
Yeah.
So it's good competition.
Yeah.
Good competition. I didn't get it put away, so I'm not exactly satisfied with objectifying it like that.
Yeah, but I know exactly what you're saying. When I first got into the UFC, I was on four, I had four fights. And I fought like Shogun, OSP, and like
all these heavy hitters.
They were like 40 fights each.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Been fighting since Pride. Yeah. I was on like 6 fight. I was like, yeah, I'll fight him.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it.
But so once you've won,
win Singapore, go back to the world titles in August of next year. And it's going to be a T-Mobile, which is pretty cool.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite stadiums to fight at.
Yeah, apparently it's unreal.
Yeah. So have you been there?
No, I've never been.
Yeah, they've built it like a Coliseum. So it's 20,000 people and it's all built.
But it's
so
on top of you.
Yeah.
That's cool. Like Suncorp.
It's the sickest thing, man. And the crowd, the vibe.
Yeah,
and
it's going to be wicked.
And Vegas just knows how to do shows, man.
Yeah.
So, man, that's super exciting. When was that?
August next year.
Okay. So, try and book Vegas flights. Okay. And then what's the... let's just go on end goals, man. End goals, and then also where people can find you and follow you.
Yeah. The end goal is just continual improvement, not only as a jiu-jitsu athlete, but as a human being.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't know where this is going to take me. I'm super fucking excited to find out because I know it's going to be greatness wherever it is. Like I said, if jiu-jitsu isn't the thing, it won't be the thing that I do, maybe something that I'm very well known for. But I think I have a pretty good idea of how to communicate thoughts and convey ideas and that people will appreciate that. And I get lots of people sending me messages that they like the way that I look at things and they like the way that it comes from a meathead. So it actually has some validity. Yeah, it's not some Poindexter.
Yeah.
Maybe that's your cup of tea.
Yeah.
But I think they gain a lot of validity from the fact that I am the combat guy. I did the gym and the sort of Chad sort of thing. Yeah. And it makes it a little bit easier for them to digest and bridges that gap in a sense. So maybe a speaking career or something like that. I'm open to every opportunity. But I conduct a lot of that stuff on Instagram and TikTok and everything else. So that's HPU Coaching. Podcast of mine, which is nowhere near as professional or anything like this. I plug a lapel mic into my phone. I talk shit for an hour a week.
Bro, we have really stepped up our game here at the Halfcast Podcast. We started in a shed.
Oh,
it
beautiful.
Was a shed and we weren't even lapel mics. We were these little things that were, if we laughed too loud, they'd break out.
Yeah.
So
I'm still in shed phase of mine.
Yeah, don't worry, man. It'll all work out.
Yeah.
Everything always works
out. But
I
talk about mindset concepts and just the way that I look at the world and things that are useful and beneficial for other people. So if they want to look at that, it's Mindset King on Spotify.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for coming on, brother.
Much appreciated.
And then best of luck and let's go back to training.
Yeah, that's it.
Thank you, everyone, for watching this episode. We got a really cool episode coming up on the 12th of November. Make sure you keep an eye out. We're going to have some massive guests. It's going to be our first live podcast on... It'll actually be on TikTok. We'll be splitting it up into two parts. I'm actually super excited for this episode. Make sure you're following along because you're going to be able to watch it live, ask questions, you'll be able to call into the episode. But again, if you enjoyed this episode, like and subscribe, and thank you for always listening. Laters.